The U.S. is monitoring demonstrations in Yemen and other Arab countries as Muslims continue to protest an anti-Islamic movie that was made in the U.S. The Boston Globe is reporting that a Massachusetts man died in the same attack in Libya that killed U.S. Ambassador Chris Stevens this week. 42-year-old Glenn Doherty of Winchester was a former Navy SEAL working for a private security firm when he was killed. Helene Cooper is a White House correspondent for The New York Times. And Helene, you wrote that while so much attention right now is on Libya, the bigger problem is Egypt. Why?
Libya is not that important to overall American national security interests. It just isn't. It's very peripheral. Egypt, on the other hand, is ground zero, really, for everything that's going on in the Mideast, not just because it's seen as a cultural center in the North African and Arab world, but also because of the Camp David peace accord between Egypt and Israel, which for 30 years has been a linchpin of American foreign policy. And what you had in Egypt 2 days ago, there were protests. Before there were protests in Benghazi, there were protests in Cairo, and the response of the governments were very different. The Libyan government was very quick to respond and to try to help, and they've launched an all-out search for the people who did this, whereas in Egypt, the new president, Mohamed Morsi, who is from the Muslim Brotherhood, has been much more reticent about coming out and condemning the attacks on the American embassy in Cairo.
Yeah, even, I was going to say, delayed the statement for about 24 hours, unlike the other countries.
Yeah, and then when he finally did, it was on Facebook to boot. It wasn't even like a real... That is very worrying. President Morsi has also taken many other steps that the Obama administration finds very worrying, including crackdowns on press freedom. There's some squabbling going on now over protection in the Sinai between Egypt and Israel. And there's just a general direction that Egypt has been going in that's kind of scary for American policymakers. The White House at 1 o'clock this morning put out two statements, readouts of the phone calls that President Obama made to the Libyan president and to the Egyptian president, and they were completely different.
In tone.
In tone, it was like so different. The one to Libya was very much, we thank you for helping, we'll get through this together. And the one to Egypt, I mean, it sounded like President Obama read President Morsi the Riot Act. It was very, very cold.
And another possible sign of that, the president said on Telemundo yesterday, I think his exact quote about the Egyptian government was, I don't think that we would consider them an ally, but we don't consider them an enemy. That's a somewhat striking comment, given what a staunch ally Egypt used to be for the U.S.
It's a very striking comment. What makes this all so even more ironic is that President Obama, through his support behind the Arab Street in Egypt, he came out very early on calling for Mubarak to step down, and he angered a lot of people. The transition must begin now, he said. And then again, a few months ago when the Egyptians had an election and the Egyptian military started to show signs as if they weren't going to abide by the results, the U.S. very strongly urged them that, you know, they had to abide by the results, which is one of the reasons why President Morsi ended up being able to assume power after the Muslim Brotherhood had won. And it was another case where of America sort of backing its foe against its friend, and that's what they've done there, which is what makes this sort of doubly vexing for the White House.
Right, as you write, you know, by backing the Arab Street, President Obama actually ends up going against the wishes of allies like Israel and Persian Gulf states. But, you know, that 2009 visit to Cairo when he talked about a new beginning for U.S.-Arab relations, does the fact that these protests are happening now, still after all this, indicate that the administration's policy is not working?
No, I don't think, I wouldn't go that far. I think that his speech in Cairo in June 2009 was not about democracy, not about protests. It was much more about respect and human dignity and respect, mutual respect. Once you start talking about democracy in the Muslim world, or democracy anywhere, is always going to come with fits and starts. There's no way that this was ever going to happen smoothly. You know, if you tell people that they can vote for who they want to, and you can't turn around then and say, oh, but you voted for the Muslim Brotherhood, we're not going to respect that. And so I think going forward, what the United States has to do is figure out a way to actually work with the Muslim Brotherhood, and that's hard.
And I think there's a larger question here, which also came up on yesterday's show, which is just how much influence does the U.S. have when these are homegrown popular movements, which, as you write, we at best have limited influence over? I mean, can we do much?
That's exactly it. So much of this is about them and not about us. You know, we've learned from past mistakes about, you know, inserting ourselves into other people's popular movement. I don't envy the people at the White House and the policymakers who are trying to figure out what to do.
Of course, because, you know, we still need a sound foreign policy. And even if what we can do is limited, there needs to be a strong approach.
Yeah, and you can't abandon, you know, now that you have a regime in power in Egypt that's not as friendly to the United States, at the same time you can't exactly, you know, wash your hands of them. There's just too much at stake there, and at the end of the day, so much of this is all about Israel, and that's, you know, America's biggest ally, foreign policy ally in the world, and as long as they're there and as long as that Sinai Peninsula is right there between Egypt and Israel, you know, this is always going to be an important place for us.
Helene Cooper is a White House correspondent for The New York Times. Helene, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thanks, Sasha.